I got into like Ben Shapiro's new like movie venture, which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the, because it seems like what they're trying to do is like do like a, you control the culture by having conservative movies or whatever.
Yeah, well, I know that that's just been part of the general narrative for a while. And I think we've touched on it at least peripherally in some of our previous discussions.
Yeah.
How culture is almost maybe more important than actual like politics or governance. Cause like, and there's the expression, and I think it's a relatively recent one, but that politics are downstream of culture. Like politics are a little bit more reactionary than, right. You know, than proactive or whatever, reactive than proactive. So yeah. I think that's interesting. I watched some of the movie, that movie, because I saw the trailer for it and I'm like, well, that looks interesting. Because it just looks like an interesting movie.
Sure.
But I haven't gone out of my way to watch the entire thing. And then that one, to be fair, was also like it was produced by them.
Right.
The same way that, like, I don't know, Netflix produces certain movies by buying them. Because that one, like, they didn't do that one from the ground,
Right. That's what I understood. I know the plot because I actually listened to like a leftist podcast go through it. And then I listened to, like, I guess it's Ben Shapiro's podcast or the Daily Caller podcast. I don't know what the fuck. It's like Ben and like four dudes.
Mm.
And they, like, it was like talking about the movie and with the director and the, so I basically know the entire plot or I know, well, like, I mean, all the beats.
And you can tell as much from the trailer, right? So like, yeah. I know when I watched the trailer, like there wasn't much. Sure. I mean, there might have been like, there's a few things that like I think reading an article about the movie, like, because it was reviewed like at Sundance like a year ago, and I think I'd read like a review there. You can watch the trailer and you kind of know. I mean, I don't know if you can guess the actual ending, but you can make some assumptions and probably not be far off,
right? Yeah,
from how the plot will sort of it's honestly. It's just, well, again, I haven't seen it and I don't know for sure, but it seems like, oh, this is just
Girl Die Hard.
Yeah, a version of like high school Die Hard. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly what it is. So it's like, okay. And that's like, you know, I like Die Hard.
Yeah.
And I like, I mean, I've always liked Thomas Jane, who I know has a role in it. I don't know how big it is.
I think it's fairly small.
But, you know, so I like him. And anyway, I mean, I'll probably check it out at some point. I do think that that's, from my perspective, I think that's a good thing that they're attempting. I don't know, because we talked about this as well. I think at some point, maybe this was just off record or whatever, but just about how like there isn't a lot of what you would consider mainstream culture that is considered more conservative.
Yeah.
Like you have like elements of country music and then that, and then maybe a handful of like TV shows, like fictional, you know, whatever, like, you know, narratives, mm-hmm. that sort of cater to that demographic.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of funny. I mean, we can talk about it. Like, I'm not against it. Like, I'm all for like people doing whatever they want. I just don't think it'll work in my opinion, or I don't think it's going to have the effect that they think it's going to have, but that's just a personal opinion.
Yeah. I think I guess I don't necessarily disagree with you. I am curious how it will shake out.
Yeah.
I think on the same token, like there has become like a greater disconnect between aspects of popular culture and like the population at large,
mm-hmm.
where I feel like there's certain things that are getting put out there. And maybe this is just, you know, me showing my hand as a more traditional or conservative person. And maybe I'm just disconnected from it. But there's things that are being like put out there as part of the mainstream that I'm not sure if people are actually really into, but it's just kind of like, oh, well, this is what's out there. This is the option. So this is what we're going to take.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to talk about it on recording, but yeah, I just feel like what was I going to say? Oh, I guess like by work, I mean, I think people are going to watch their shit and support it. But I also think those people are already conservative Ben Shapiro fans.
Yes.
And I think the goal is, like, at least to hear Ben tell it, like, we're going to make entertainment that's so good that, like, moderates or even, like, you know, center liberals will watch it and then maybe, like, be persuaded, or, you know, kind of like.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking that they like preemptively, if that was their goal, they preemptively shot themselves in the foot, because they shouldn't have advertised their intention at all. Like, they should have collectively, as whoever, whatever the, you know, the brain trust is behind, obviously, whether the Daily Wire, it's like their production company. But, like, if they were really wanting to accomplish something that's a little bit more subversive in the way that you might think Hollywood has been doing it over the last 50, 60 years, is that you just start a production company, you call it something else, you fund it collectively, but you sell it as if it's something else, right? Or as if it's just like, oh, this is just another production company that we're making movies now.
Right.
But I think they have, they've already, you sort of separate yourself from that, your mission, by, like, just being like, we're a Daily Wire production and this is the Ben Shapiro movie, because then, yeah, you will get people to watch it, but you're right. I don't think it will necessarily be anybody new, but maybe, like, you know, maybe down the road, it just, again, if they are actually really good about putting the stuff together, if the movies and the programs that they produce are actually quality enough, there's a chance for some outreach there. But I think that you do automatically, unfortunately, turn a lot of people off based on the fact that you are the Daily Wire, whether that's right or not. Just, like, I think, like, on the opposite side of things, I think some of these other older production companies and studios are sort of starting to maybe show their hands too much and maybe turning away audience members. But at the same time, they have, like, 100 years of history and, you know, customer loyalty built in. That's like, yeah, they can probably shed a few and be okay versus trying to build up a new audience. So it's curious. I mean, I think that it's, and I think Ben Shapiro even did a video on it a week or so, or maybe it was the same week as the movie got released. Like, oh, here are movies that are actually more conservative that were popular, but people just don't really think of them that way. And I'm like, well, that's true. And that's why some of the narrative is a little bit false, that, like, there is no conservative philosophy present in popular culture, but it's not consumed that way. Like, because a lot of the conservative stuff, again, is for the most part, it's so traditional in its values that no one sees it, like, the stuff that's acceptable or whatever, people don't really pay much mind to it, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean,
I'd say, well, go ahead.
I said, like, I wish them well in the sense that, like, I have no problem with more stories being told. And if they're going to tell stories that are, like, even obviously with that Run, Hide, Fight, it's just a kind of a take on the Die Hard story. But, like, yeah, I think as just a plot structure, that's not the worst. I've seen a few different movies that have done it. Some do it well, some do it poorly. But it's a basic action story that I can kind of enjoy.
Sure.
So it's like, okay. And if they can do more stuff that's more, again, of their own making completely, that's pretty cool.
I feel that, I mean, on one level, like, I'm not like, oh, I hope Ben Shapiro's production company fails or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they make, I mean, again, I'm not super, I've heard that this movie's actually not bad. Like, I've heard they have, like, pretty good practical effects in it. And, like, for what it is, it's, you know, it is, like, a pretty straightforward, like, there's bad guys, they do bad things, good guys kill the bad guys. Right. I mean, I would say, like, the conservative elements would probably be, like, the good guy with a gun kind of narrative. And then there is one scene that I haven't seen, so I haven't seen the movie. My understanding is one of the school shooters, because this is, like, a school shooting movie, is, like, a big galoot who's, like, schizophrenic or something.
Mm.
Like, literally, like, mentally ill, like, talking to himself and, like, mumbling to himself.
Yeah.
And he's, like, legitimately, like, mentally ill or whatever in the context of the movie. And he, and I guess at one point confronts the protagonist, who's, like, a young female.
Right.
Whose dad is played by Thomas Jane. And then he's about to like beat her up or kill her. But then Thomas Jane just like snipes him in the head and blows his brains out. Mm-hmm. Which like, again, like, I guess that in that situation, I could see, because if we're talking about like in a moral framework, like I could see why you would make that decision. Cause like, of course you're going to pick your daughter over this guy who's going to kill her. But there is this weird undercurrent of like the mentally ill, and like, what do we do with them? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the movie's saying like, well, you shoot him in the head, or if they address, I haven't seen it. Maybe they address it in a more nuanced way. Like,
yeah,
this guy had problems. Maybe we could have helped him.
Right.
Didn't have time because he got sucked into this whatever situation. I'm all for, again, like if push comes to shove, if you have to kill a mentally ill person or whatever in order to save other people's lives, of course. But I just think that's a weird, that one struck me as weird.
Well, again, it's hard for us, either of us, to talk about it because we don't know the full context of the movie. Sure. Or how it's presented. So like if that was presented, I assume like maybe in an article or a YouTube video, mm-hmm. probably taking that immediate perspective or like, oh, like, I don't know, I think we should maybe present mental illness in this light or whatever else it might or be. Like, but I would have to, yeah. I don't know. Again, like I hadn't read anything about that scene. I was like, again, my exposure to it is I saw the trailer.
Right.
And then I tried to watch that because they did it a free stream of it, like when they uh-huh. premiered it. But I had they designed it in a way where if you weren't actually watching it live, you didn't get to watch the whole thing, because I kind of caught uh-huh. onto it later. And I just went, because you can go back on a live stream, and then for certain YouTube videos, like it'll let you just watch out the remainder of it.
Right.
And this one didn't. So as soon as like they actually cut off the feed, like the movie ended. So I only caught the beginning. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll try to watch it later at some point. Then I just haven't got around to it. And I haven't looked to see if it's available anywhere other than the Daily Wire right. website. So I don't know yeah. if you can like rent it on Amazon or whatever else. Cause also that's another thing as far as like the platforming of it. And again, I understand that they want to have it on their own platform, but logistically you want to make it as available as possible. So like you think you'd right. want to have it on other platforms too, but I don't know. Again, I assume they've got some smart guys over there, again, like Ben Shapiro is a Harvard educated lawyer, and they've got other guys who are pretty smart. I imagine they got smart tech savvy people over there as well, who kind of run the numbers or whatever, as far as that's
concerned. We'll see.
But
because they were pretty much money begging on their little, on their YouTube, on their wrap up. Well, every 10 minutes, Ben was like, please, guys, we need your money if you want us to keep doing this.
Yeah, and I guess in slight defense of that, and this isn't really specifically sure. to them, but that seems like that's just a very large undercurrent of most YouTube,
like, yeah, true.
Channels, networks, whatever, where it's just like, hey, like, support us on Patreon, like, support us on our thing here. You can, or support us by, you know, shopping with our sponsors, whatever else it is, like it's just like anything else. Right. I think that there has been a concerted effort with that particular thing, because like obviously that ball doesn't get to keep rolling unless people are like, you know, buying or renting that movie. Right. So if people aren't checking that out specifically, then it's kind of like, okay, well, we had these lofty goals,
right,
but we don't have the built-in audience or whatever.
But I agree with you that I think the smarter move would have been to like start a different production company, kind of, and see what happens and see if people do like enjoy their movies outside of the context of it's a Ben Shapiro joint.
Right. Though,
yeah. Like, I think like, cause I, again, like I've heard, like I even, they're pretty like, this podcast is pretty left, and like a couple of the hosts were like, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good movie. I mean, they might not agree with the politics, but in terms of like the movie,
the production and the acting and everything. Yeah. Well, that was the thing I did see a little bit as far as the reactions that someone pointed out. And I think this may have just been like a single, you know, periodical that did it, but like when the movie was reviewed at Sundance or whenever, a festival it premiered at, like it had like pretty decent accolades, and then as soon as like the Shapiro or the Daily Wire was attached to it, like I think, like I don't know if it was the same journalist or again the same periodical was like, oh, like this is crap, it's like, you know, conservative sure. shill work, like propaganda, like don't buy into it. So that's just kind of funny, like that we do that, right, when we sure. and I think everyone's guilty of this, where like you see a certain at this point, I think it's often more like a certain actor or something, maybe director that's attached to a certain thing, where now you think of it differently. Like, I was talking to my brother about this recently with like the X-Men movies that were coming out, where, you know, as you know myself, like I grew up as a big comic book geek and I loved a lot of those movies growing up. But then like when stuff started coming out about Bryan Singer, like in his like personal life, I did legitimately feel like I don't want to support things that he's done, because he seems like he's kind of like a skeezy dude, right?
Yeah.
So like I think it was when X-Men, I want to say X-Men Apocalypse came out, and I was like pretty torn on whether to go see it or not, and I think I ultimately ended up seeing it. But
did he direct that one?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
I agree with you. Bryan Singer seems like a pretty skeezy dude who never really got held to account.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, stuff like that. And then even like now, I don't know if I can feel retroactively guilty. I still enjoy the product, right? Is like the stuff that's been kind of coming out about Joss Whedon. And I don't know if you've been following any of that, where it's like, and again, like for him, it seems like he's more just like a dick.
A mean guy.
Yeah, like just sort of like a general, just sort of douchey sort of fella. So it doesn't have quite the same effect, but it does kind of like make me like kind of like look back and be like, oh, that's a bummer, because I think he's a talented creative, right? Where like, I think he created narratives and stories that were fun to watch and follow. And he's the guy who did the first Avengers, the first two Avengers movies. But at the same time, I think a lot of directors could have done that. I don't think, because I think one of the guys who I think should have done it, ultimately, they should have, like, I don't know maybe why they didn't, if there was different things there, but it was Jon Favreau. Because he'd obviously done the Iron Man, the first two Iron Man movies. The second one, obviously not as good, but that's like more on writing than, you know, technical accomplishment.
Right.
And he's shown himself to be a very more than capable, just really solid. I mean, obviously with the first Iron Man movie, he did like the Jungle Book live action, did the Lion King live action. He did Elf, you know, I mean, he's been doing the Mandalorian. Like, he's a very competent filmmaker. So it's like, he was already involved in that. So yeah, he could have done it. He probably could have done it very well. He had a pretty good understanding of some of those characters already. Anyway, that's sort of besides the point. But anyway, just kind of, you can look back on some of those things and just be like, and I guess like, to the same reach, you can say the same thing, although not quite as directly, as like anything that was ever produced by Harvey Weinstein, right? Like, he's obviously a despicable human being, but he was part of a production team for a lot of really good movies for like whatever 20 or 30 years.
I would recommend, well, go ahead.
Well, I say, so like, there's just a matter of like, and again, like I will still go back and watch those things, but it's just like, I don't support him as a human being. And you don't support those things going forward. I think that's the most you can do, right? Like, once you are aware of something that you don't agree with, or something, not even that you don't agree with, something that's like, that's completely abhorrent. Like, I think like with the Joss Whedon stuff, like I could probably see something else he produces and feel like mostly okay about it. But it's kind of like, I could, at the same time, based on the stuff that's coming out, I feel like he won't get so many opportunities moving forward unless he like completely shifts who he is, versus, let's say, again, along the same lines of a director, writer, director who was on the verge of being canceled was James Gunn. But you can look back on his stuff and be like, hey, those were just like retroactively insensitive and like bad jokes, right? Like, and especially if you kind of know a little bit about James Gunn, like, he's kind of a quirky weirdo. And if you know about like his background with trauma, like he came from that sort of like shock, you know, entertainment value culture. So it's like, he was trying to be humorous. And if you kind of know anything about his career, you understand that.
Yeah.
And again, like, you can just look back and be like, oh, those were like shitty, potentially creepy jokes, but
funny James Gunn. I always think James Gunn's cancellation is funny, because that was like a right-wing attempt at a cancellation. where like some right-wing dudes were like, we're going to strike back and cancel James Gunn for being a pedophile or something,
right?
For making a joke about pedophilia. It didn't work, and hilarious. I think the difference is that like everyone who worked with James Gunn is like, we like James Gunn, and it seems like everyone who works with Joss Whedon is like, Joss Whedon sucks.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and again, like, that's where you just have the different current of those things in the legitimacy of it, because again, like, a lot of people like immediately jumped to defend James Gunn. And then it was, I want to say, was it Mike Cernovich or whatever,
it was Mike Cernovich
to expose him. But then you would have like conservative people like Ben Shapiro actually immediately defended James Gunn. It's like,
that's good.
He's like, yeah, those were like I don't agree with like the, I wouldn't make a joke like that, but you can pretty much tell there were jokes and they were also tweeted like 6-8 years ago. Yeah. So like, really? Like, are we doing this? Like, do we want this as a precedent? Like, no, like,
right.
He's a perfectly competent filmmaker. People have nice things to say about him. There's no proof that he's done anything illegal.
Right.
Let's just drop it, fellas.
Yeah. Just to sort of wrap up the Joss Whedon thoughts, I agree with you. It, for him, it does feel like he's like a medium level of, like, it's not like Bryan Singer or it's not like other people who have been canceled for stuff that like seems legitimately borderline illegal or illegal.
Sure.
Or, you know, like,
well, that's like the weirder thing with like Bryan Singer though, is I don't think that anything official has ever been like nailed down on him, but it's like, from the things I read and heard, it's kind of like,
seems
just again, skeezy and just like, it's just very shady. And it seems like you're probably just a step away from getting like the full Weinstein, Kevin Spacey treatment, whatever it might be.
Where it just seems like Joss Whedon is just kind of an asshole.
Yeah, he's like an asshole boss.
Yeah.
Who's finally, and I think that's kind of nice. That's good that in general, like an asshole boss can be called out in like a public eye, because I think that that will force anybody in a level of management to just be better human beings, hopefully.
Yeah.
Treat your employees well, because, you know, in the age of social media, like you can't really afford not to.
I'm all for it. Like, I don't really, I don't really care about, you know, in general, and I was talking to my wife about this the other day. I do think it's sort of funny, not funny, but this is mildly off topic, but when stuff like this happens with like Joss Whedon or anybody really, people always seem shocked. And I feel like the older I get, it's like, well, you don't know these people. Like,
right.
But I don't know if it's like people make assumptions. It's like, well, I like their work. Their art is good, therefore they must be good people, or like,
right,
therefore I'm projecting like my,
yeah. And I know that like Joss Whedon has been kind of propped up in other ways, so maybe that's why people become shocked, because he was very propped up as like this pro feminist sort of writer and producer and stuff like that, and in terms of like the other social issues he's attached himself to. So I think maybe people project in that way with him specifically. I think there are other folks, like, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but there was like the stuff that came out about Marilyn Manson.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, I don't think you're surprising too many people with these revelations. Like, anybody who's willing to essentially live in the public eye the way that he has, even though, like, you know, you can hear him in interviews and he sounds like this kind of normal person, but he's still putting on, you know, like, white base makeup and wearing weird contacts and like that, he's lived his life that way. It's like, okay, well, he's obviously different.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, I don't know how many people are super shocked. And then I saw some meme about it, you know, recently in response to all that, but it was like something along the lines of like the Christian conservative moms who were, you know, like shunning him back in the 90s were like,
right,
just kind of like, well, I told you so.
That's
funny. Kind of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, that's not necessarily wrong, right? It's kind of like, yeah, maybe he's kind of not a great, like, it's not a surprise to, I think, a good deal of people that something is off about him. Maybe not that it was to the point where it's been revealed, right, as far as the abuses and things like that. But
yeah.
And then the same token, you get guys like, I don't know if you, this is another one who's got canceled. Well, whatever, canceled recently, is like Armie Hammer, the actor. Like, I don't know if you'd followed that. Like, apparently,
a little bit.
And I haven't looked too much into it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, again, like that one's interesting because like he comes off as obviously like this really handsome, like just, you know, studly American matinee idol. And then it's like, oh, he's into like cannibal eating fetishism. and like, he's also abusive.
Well, this is like a funny intersection of, well, I didn't hear about the abusive part. I've only heard about the weird, like, I want to eat your barbecue, your ribs and eat them or whatever kind of stuff. Maybe he is abusive too, so I shouldn't speak out of turn, but it's funny because there's like this weird intersection of, at least on the online sort of left side of things, where you don't want to like kink shame anyone or like make fun of someone's sexual fetish.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like cannibalism is so far on the edge that they're like, well, maybe this time we could cancel.
Right. And I understand that. At the same time, like, there's people who were like pro, or they will like defend, like, you know, like the rape fetishism, which I think is like also really horrendous, but they'll defend that in some capacity.
In some ways.
And then like like for any of those things, it's ultimately, it's like the legitimate acting out on them. Like, so sure. Like, well, is there like any proof that Armie Hammer has killed or had someone killed and eaten them? Which for, as far as I know, that's never happened. And it's just like, it's things he's said. And like, I don't understand it, but there's a lot of things about like kink culture or whatever that I don't understand. So
yes,
but at the same time, like, I'm also not like an anti kink shame person. I think like if you're into something really weird, like I'll tell you, I think it's weird. You
know,
I think that's okay to do.
I think it's okay. I think the difference is like to like, you know, I think it's fine to think something's weird. I think the anti kink shame stuff is supposed to be like, well, actually they would say, don't say it's weird, but I think it's supposed to be like, you don't, just because you're into this stuff doesn't mean you should, you know, lose your job or whatever, or be kicked off of whatever your you know, work friendship group is. But this one's pretty bizarre. It's really hard to swallow, for lack of a better term. Like, I don't know, eating people is definitely extreme. The rape one, I also don't get it, and it's weird, but I do think like a weird amount of, I could be wrong, I think there's a weird amount of women who are into like that kind of fetish.
I think I'm not even sure if it would just, you know, be divided necessarily right down the lines of sex and gender, but you have, again, like just fetishes across the board, right? You know, whether it's the rape fetish stuff, you've got, I guess, I didn't even know cannibal fetish was a thing.
I'd
read about the Armie Hammer stuff. But you get people who are into some like just really, really bizarre things. Again, I guess sometimes a lot more benign than others, right? Like, I don't know, like people who are like into like weird food plates. Like, that's kind of like, I guess maybe messy and gross, but whatever. You know, if it's your bag, that's your bag. And
sure.
Like furries or whatever, or at least the ones who kind of do it in like a sexual way. It's kind of like, that's also weird, like to me. Like, but
yeah,
it's,
but
again,
cool,
it's again, but it, yeah, it's like, yeah, it seems pretty harmless,
right?
All things considered. So like, if it's all consensual, like it's all good.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about I don't really care about the Mandalorian. So I don't really care that one lady got canceled. That one seems a little weak, but.
Yeah. Well, I think that one I don't like, and it's kind of funny, like, I don't care in the sense, like, I actually didn't think that I don't think she's that great of an actress.
Okay.
And I didn't personally think the character was that interesting on The Mandalorian. I'm like, I could have taken her leave and left her or whatever. I think that the canceling of her or the firing of her based on what I'd read or seen seems like an overreaction.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know the ins and outs of it. I think that we'll see. I know that again, this goes back to the idea of, we were talking about like big studios losing support. And I think that there has been, you know, I've seen or heard of people like canceling their Disney Plus or trying to like, you know, step away from their affiliation or association with Disney stuff.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, and maybe there is a big enough audience out there that thinks what they've done is absurd, that they will see it in their, you know, their returns or their lack thereof, right? Like in the coming months.
I mean, I doubt it.
I doubt it. Since, again, I think Disney is they're such a giant that I think that there's probably some of these people who they've canceled Disney Plus, but they like they aren't aware that Hulu is now owned by Disney and they still have Hulu. And they aren't aware that if they watch anything on ABC, ABC is owned by Disney. They aren't aware if they're watching something like a movie that's, I'm trying to remember, like they have a handful of subsidiary movie production companies. They're owned by Disney, but like, it doesn't have the Disney marquee on it. Right. So it's like, they're such a big and old studio. It's pretty hard to avoid like consuming their content. Like, you're going to have to cut out quite a bit. Like, if you're really that adamant about it.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess you could, with the bottom line with The Mandalorian is a Disney Plus show. So if you're happy enough, just being like, okay, I don't like what Lucasfilm did in relationship to The Mandalorian, you know, with Disney Plus. So we're just not going to support that platform anyway. Yeah. And I guess that's one thing.
We'll see. Because I feel like a lot of conservative guys love The Mandalorian. So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, don't know I think that it just, again, it's, I think you have old school movie fans who like it. And then there's just a, that's where there's overlap. But that's one thing that I kind of like miss about aspects of pop culture is that used to be something that everyone could sort of consume and just enjoy together. And we could be like, okay, we can put all of our politics aside and we can enjoy watching, you know, this, you know, whatever Star Wars movie, we can enjoy watching a Jim Carrey movie or Adam Sandler. We can enjoy watching a dumb stoner comedy. We can enjoy watching the Judd Apatow films or whatever it is. And same thing with sports. And I think that there was a point in time where not that none of these things never had political undercurrents, but like they weren't so outwardly politicized that it, you felt like you were supporting something one way or the other, right? When you were, you know,
yeah, and I don't know,
audience to these things.
I think it's definitely gotten, I don't know, I'd have to double check, because I think there's always been political pushback to art.
Well,
more
that's
historically
true.
I would say like conservatives disparaging whatever boundary pushing art is the new hotness, too sexual, too whatever, too progressive. Can't have a black guy kiss a white lady or whatever it was back right. in the day. And now it seems like it is more both sides. Although I still think the conservatives have the most complaints. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how, like, I don't know. Now that I'm thinking this through, because it's like, I hear a lot from conservative corners that like movies are pushing like an SJW agenda. They're mm-hmm. shoving these things down our throat. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I don't think this new Star Wars movies were very good.
Right.
I don't think they were, for a lot of reasons, but I didn't get like very much social agenda out of them, to be honest.
And this is where the politicizing of it comes in. And maybe it's just because of social media that we become more aware of it. It's not so much necessarily within the stories themselves, but like the production and the narrative around it. So I'll say, and this is, you know, maybe, and this is somewhat true when you talk about the Star Wars, the most recent trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Production is there was a very focused effort. Like they had like the whole Forces Female campaign and trying to push like, you know, the Rey as this, you know, who's the protagonist of the sequel trilogy as like this big main character. And for anyone, I mean, you can sort of objectively watch those movies and see that it was done at the, to the detriment of like the original three characters, right? Like the original trilogy. So when you say, you know, Han Solo, Luke Skywalker and Leia, and I think Leia was actually, that was just more, because Carrie Fisher had passed away before she was able to get her time in the sun, so to speak. But like the other characters were done a great disservice, even if just sort of as collateral damage or as an accident, because I don't necessarily think any of it was purposeful, right? It was just kind of like, oh, well, we want to tell a new story with our new characters, but we realize that we're part of a connected universe.
Yeah.
And then doing the sequel trilogy is different than say doing like the prequel trilogy when they did that back in the early 2000s. Cause it's like, okay, obviously you're bringing in a bunch of new actors and you're bringing in different characters because you have to, like, you know, like, okay, we have Darth Vader, but we realize that we're seeing a different, like the lead up to it. Right. And obviously, I mean, you and I have had a lot of conversations about this in the past as kids. It's sure. like, well, those prequels weren't very good in a lot of ways.
No.
But anyway, it was just like the idea of kind of pushing that deal to the point where it made the story worse, even if on an accident. It's like the whole argument that was coming out there about the Rey character was like the Mary Sue-ness of her.
Sure.
And I would imagine like I you know, maybe I'm not looking at this objectively, but she seemed to be a character that lacked a lot of flaws. And then like that is a less interesting character inherently. So I think that's part of like, oh, well, we want to project a strong female character. And I don't think that you're going to find that many Star Wars fans that are against that, because a lot of people were very pro Princess Leia for any, and this is the argument they bring up, or like, you know, in defense of themselves or whatever, is that one of the most popular Star Wars creations of the last 20 years is that Ahsoka Tano. female character. Like, people love her and they hated her at first, actually. Like, when she first premiered on the Clone Wars movie, like, oh, this character's lame. Mm-hmm. But they developed her in a way where, like, oh, you know, in a very positive deal.
Yeah, no, I mean,
then,
I
like would... John Boyega has brought up things as well where, like, the, and again, it's again, I don't think any of it was necessarily hyper intentional, but, like, because they decided to really push that character, and I think it was maybe not political, but, like, to kind of push a social agenda, it forced the, or forced, I don't know, forced, it made the movies not as good as they could have been.
But I would argue that it's not because of the political agenda. It was just, like, no plan and bad writing. Cause, like, I would say it's probably, if I had to guess, they put a black guy and a lady in there to get more black people and women interested in Star Wars. And I would say that in my at least limited experience in a middle school, the having just Rey in there at all worked. There's a bunch of girls who are, like, into Star Wars because of Rey, and they dress as Rey for Halloween and blah, blah, blah. But as an adult, I'm like, well, the writing sucks and these characters didn't go anywhere or do anything.
Right.
And I think that's just a function of it not being planned, that they just were like, okay, yeah, write your part, J.J. Abrams. And then, okay, now you write the next part, whoever the next guy was. And, like, they just didn't think it through. And so these characters didn't have interesting arcs.
Yeah. Well, and I would, yeah, so I agree with that, right? So, yeah. Or I don't disagree with that. Sure. Because I do think it was just as a complete trilogy or a series of movies, it was very, very poorly planned, which actually, if you just know enough about, like, the history of Star Wars, that's not, you know, inconsistent right. with how they've been made. Because even right, the original true. Trilogy had true. its share of problems. And I think that ultimately, yes, that's the reason why the stories didn't work out, is because they didn't have a plan. Mm-hmm. Now, again, like, just going back to the politicization of it, and that's why I was saying is I don't think it necessarily exists within the actual stories themselves, but kind of what goes behind them is, and there is that legitimate, like, the Force is female campaign. They made a point of hiring or valuing, like, diversity in their writer's room versus, like, you know, well, who's the person who actually understands storytelling best, you know? So they had some of that going on, because, like, that's what started or came from, Disney buying Lucasfilm, as opposed to obviously George Lucas writing and develop all these things. So at least there was an aspect of consistency, even if they were, you know, there were flaws in it. It's like, oh, it's the flaws of a single mind, right? Kind of like that missed some of the stuff. But, like, you had, like, this brain trust of people, like, oh, this is what we want to do with Star Wars moving forward.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't just J.J. Abrams, obviously. It wasn't just Rian Johnson. And they didn't think to bring in people who were maybe bigger, like, Star Wars fans or even better storytellers. It's just kind of, well, who are some up and coming different names we can get? Now, I couldn't even tell you their names because I don't think any of them have accomplished too much outside of, like, these Star Wars writer rooms. And again, this, as far as the movies are concerned, like, I don't think they had much to do with them, because the first one was written by J.J. Abrams and Jake Kasdan. Rian Johnson, I think, wrote the second one kind of alone, and then the third one was J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio, if I'm not mistaken. So these are, like, kind of, like, outside forces. But there is a point where within Lucasfilm, and again, this is where the PlayStation, like, kind of comes in, and I'm not super 100% on the actual facts of it, but they did have kind of, like, oh, this is our plan for Star Wars in a broad sense. And again, their sense was more, my understanding, maybe I'm completely wrong, it was more agenda-based than story-based. Like, we would like to promote diversity here, we would like to do this here, and this is what we want you guys to incorporate, versus, like, hey, like, let's create a brain trust to tell a good story. It was to have certain social agendas incorporated.
Well, yeah, I think we would just disagree on the primary driver. I think Disney was like, hey, let's make some cash, and that's it. And they didn't give a crap about the story, really. They didn't care enough about, in my mind, and maybe they do care now because they got so much backlash, but it was just, let's make some money. man.
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, for Disney themselves. So again, like there are degrees of decision making, I guess, here. Disney itself, and whoever the CEO was at the time.
Right.
Obviously, you buy a property like Star Wars, or you buy Lucasfilm rather, because you know that there's revenue built in there. So to them, it's just kind of like, hey, like they probably couldn't have cared less about the actual product that was put out, because like, hey, like people are going to go see this anyway, and that was proven all the way up through The Last Jedi, right? Like Star Wars, The Force Awakens, like that was one of the biggest box office movies of all time. Rogue One did very well. The Last Jedi, again, like it had a really great opening weekend, and it had diminishing returns because it, you know, amongst the fandom, it wasn't as well received. Then like Solo did pretty poorly, if I'm not mistaken. I think like relatively it still found success because again, it has such brand recognition.
Right.
And then my understanding of, was it The Last Skywalker? Is that what they called it? No,
I think so.
Rise of Skywalker. Didn't, again, like compared to other Star Wars stuff, was not super successful. It still made money, like as far as box office stuff, people still went to go see it. So you have those diminishing returns there. And they probably, I think anybody at Disney sort of probably knew that in some capacity, is that like, we could produce like a handful of not very good movies and people will still go see them regardless on brand alone.
Yep.
Which is also true of like the Marvel stuff. Now, thankfully with the Marvel stuff, as it progressed, there seemed to be a better mechanism for quality control through Kevin Feige or whatever. But there were still movies that aren't as good, right, that came out. So whether you think like the Iron Man 2s, the Thor 2 movies, and, you know, other things that people at the same time, like even those are fine. But kind of like the worst of them are like, that was all right. You know, like maybe I won't watch it again, but like, I'm not going to kick myself for watching it. I'm not going to cry about how bad it was or whatever. It's just kind of like, that was whatever. And so like that was sort of baked into the cake within the MCU. And then for Star Wars, it just wasn't there. And I mean, I don't know if we're just sort of like definitely veering off into strange territory.
I think that what we're talking about is like whether or not SJW, because I hear that a lot from conservatives, like SJW stuff is ruining my insert, you know, property here. I don't think it happens very as often as conservatives think it happens. I would say like the only example that I could think of that like, and even then I wouldn't say it was the SJW nature that ruined it, but the Ghostbusters movie, which I haven't seen, which apparently is awful. I wonder if that's just like because they're like, okay, we'll do an all females Ghostbusters, and then they didn't think very hard about like how do we make it funny or good. They were just right. Like,
well, and that's, I guess that's more what it comes down to, because like I know the Ghostbusters one is definitely sort of like, I guess I don't know, the cornerstone of that argument. And I've seen that movie actually a couple times because I kind of wanted to see it. I saw it in theaters just because like I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. Like the trailers didn't actually look very good, but I'm a big Ghostbusters fan. So I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they couldn't quite figure out how to advertise it.
Right.
So I go and watch it and it's not very good. Like it's not horrendous, but it's just not very good. And that was sort of the case with it. And then I watch it, you know, over a few years later after it's on release, just like, hey, let me just confirm, like maybe I had too much whatever social sphere influence from what I was reading and hearing about it. And I watch it again and it's just kind of like, no, that legitimately just wasn't a very good movie. And it seemed like with it, the purpose of it was like, oh, we're doing, like you said, like an all female Ghostbusters movie. Like, and that was their only goal. It wasn't to make a good movie. It was to make a lady Ghostbusters movie. And I think that's much more true with that particular movie than it is with any of the Star Wars stuff. I think that there are narratives within the Star Wars thing that like that was sort of something they really wanted. Like, oh, like let's have it, like let's really make this trilogy more female centric, right? Because you have a female lead, like the protagonist is a young lady, and they kind of like propped up other female characters in other ways, which I don't think is bad at all.
Right.
But I do think that it ended up maybe inadvertently again being to the story's detriment, and that was more again like to your point or whatever. It's just bad writing. Like, it wasn't necessarily because of the agenda. It's like, well, why didn't you think about giving this character an actual arc versus just existing within the story? Like, why didn't, you know, you do this? Like, and some of the other characters, or I guess really only one that they bring up is the Captain Holdo character. Is that her name? Or Commander Holdo from the second one, where where it's kind of like, obviously there's correlations within our modern society, but when you got the pink hair and the female power, where like from a Star Wars fan's perspective, you can look at that and be like, well, she didn't seem like that much like a Star Wars character, and then the role she filled to a Star Wars fan's mind like would have been better filled by another character. It's like, oh, like there was the talk at the time, like, oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda been Admiral Ackbar, who they unceremoniously killed, like in a, you know, a missile attack at the very beginning of the movie. Or like, oh, if there was a way for Leia to go out, this would have been the way. And obviously they didn't really know what was going to happen when they made the movie, so you can't really think about it that way. But like, that would have been a very fitting moment for Leia, as far as kind of like what she was doing within the story, and so on and so forth. But
Not to belabor Star Wars talk, but I would say actually her character is, I think, the strongest example in Star Wars of SJW politics sort of shoehorning themselves into a movie in a bad way, because I've only seen that movie one time. But in my recollection, the plot, her plot is basically she has a secret plan that she refuses to tell Poe, one of our primary characters, and like the message, at least the message that I think the movie was giving, was like Poe is in the wrong for questioning her as a woman and a leader, and he should have just trusted her the whole time, even though the movie gives us no reason to trust her, or they could have done that so much better, because there is like an argument to be made, like, oh, maybe, you know, Poe isn't in command, so he shouldn't be. But like,
right. Well, and that's where, like, if they would have, and this just goes back to writing in general, is that would have been a more appropriate story with General Leia doing all of that, because she's got established credibility in the entire franchise as even a leader throughout the entire original trilogy. So if you have this well-established character, and then you have one of our new leads sort of like trying to defy them, then you understand the point that's being made better.
Yeah. But even that, I would say
a newly introduced character who like, oh, and like, to me, like I was actually assuming, and this, maybe again, we're just getting more on a story or a diatribe about the like storytelling, but it's like, I assumed that she was going to be a villain, like legitimately, like, oh no, it turns out that she's on the bad guy's side. Cause that's kind of how it was, where it was going. And then like, they're like, no, we're not doing that.
Well, it has a trope that I hate in all fiction, is character refuses to give information in order to drive plot. That drives me up a wall, where like, it's just like, she could easily explain to Poe, like, oh, here's what we're doing. And he'd be like, oh, okay. And then that would have been resolved. But instead it's like, I'm not going to tell you for reasons in order to cause drama. So I hate that broadly, regardless of a man. Sure,
absolutely.
Or a woman.
Yeah.
But then again, the message shouldn't be that to me, the message should be that leaders should explain things to their subordinates.
Right.
Should try to help people who don't understand what's going on understand. But instead, it's like, no, Poe's in the wrong for questioning her.
Yeah.
And to me, the way the movie frames it, it's kind of like, well, he's doing it for kind of sexist reasons. I could be wrong. I've only seen the movie one time, but it kind of felt like he's questioning her because she's a woman and he's a man and he deserves to know.
Right.
And like, no, I mean, if we just remove their genders, it's like, of course he wants to know. He doesn't know what's going on.
Right. Yeah. So, well, again, so that's, I guess that's the biggest storytelling aspect that I think is more within that, the social commentary agenda or whatever.
Ben Shapiro, I don't think, to circle back around to, I actually am curious, what, I want to know what movies he said were conservative. I would say, before you answer, I think most Brad Bird movies are kind of like conservative, but
well, yeah, and the thing is, I think there's a case to be made for just, I mean, again, a lot of movies in general. Again, it's depending on your perspective or critical lens, right?
But
the one I remember, because there was a list of like five And there's really only one that's sticking out to me that I remember is A Quiet Place, is that he saw that as what could be perceived as a very conservative movie, because it's kind of all about the idea of the family and having the family stick together, and even the promotion of the continuing of a family, even in times of struggle, right? Because like that's the whole kind of what drives the narrative for the movie, is that she's pregnant, right? And it's like, you know, it doesn't make sense to have a kid in that world, but it's kind of like, hey, like we love each other, we're a family, we're going to stick together, we're going to have a kid because that's what we're, you know, whatever design. So he was kind of seeing it as like a pro-life movie. I don't think that's the argument the movie was making at all, but you can look at it that way. I'm like, yeah, I mean, at least subtly, it does have a pro-life message, in the sense that like, even in times of struggle or chaos, like it's okay to want and to have a child and to value the family unit. So that was the one that was sort of like his lead-in movie that he was pointing out. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. And again, I've only seen it the one time, but it was a very pro-family movie, and the idea of, you know, family support and sticking together, which oddly enough has sort of become more associated with conservative values than just values in general.
But there is
an aspect of progressive culture and we talked about this with our review of 1984, right? Where there is sort of like this weird push or acceptance of like the non-family, right? So whether it's like promiscuous sex, like single parenthood, or kind of the abandoning of the family or whatever, is promoted more in progressive circles than you would, I guess, find in conservative circles.
I guess I would say it's funny that that's the impression, because I think most liberals I know are pro-family. I think it's more like...
Well, and that's where there is a disconnect, because I think most people are really pro-family, but I would still say that, like, again, this is more pop culture wise or socially, like there is this pushing of like non-family things, and that's maybe a little bit subjective as to what you consider like family friendly or real family values. But one thing, this is, I guess, a slight divergence. This is something from over 20 years ago, so it kind of makes sense as far as what is being shown or accepted, although it also in part reflects reality, kind of, is I just on a lark, because I saw it on Netflix, just started watching Dawson's Creek.
Okay. So
it's, you know, on there. And then like, as I've been watching it, I'm like, not a single one of these kids has like a normal home or family life. Like of all of the main cast. And like, I understand that you're trying to write drama and like build that in.
Yes.
Like, and that's all part of the deal, but like, you've got like, one of them's like the parents are getting divorced. Another one, like you have parents who just completely don't care about their daughter, so they ship her off to live with a grandparent. Another one is like, one of the parents is in jail. The other one has died. Another one, you've got, it's the father is sort of abusive, or whatever else. Another one is one of the parents is like crazy, and like the other parent is like cold and like distant. And it's kind of like, I understand to have these things in your show to create the drama and so on and so forth, but it just seems, again, this is me bringing my own experience into it, is like growing up with the friends I did, like yourself included, like I just saw like full happy families. Like I think the one friend of ours, you know, we had like maybe, you know, a handful of friends we know that had divorced parents. And I know the divorce rate is around 50%? I don't know. Is that right?
Sounds like it was what was often quoted when we were growing up. I don't know if it's fallen since.
Yeah. I just noticed that as I'm rewatching. I'm like, oh, that's just interesting. Like, I didn't pick up on that at all, because I've seen it before. Like, I'd watched like Dawson's Creek in some capacity when it was on television.
I guess it's still 50%.
Yeah. So again, just the idea like, oh, like there's not a single... what you would consider more traditional family on that show.
But they aren't. That's all presented negatively, right? I mean, none of that is like this is what y'all should aspire to. It's like,
well, no, it, yeah, like, it's not necessarily presented like in, it's not presented in a positive light, but it's it, there's a weird thing again as I'm observing it that it's presenting it as normal, which I guess it is, right? Just based on the statistics, as you do have at least, but again, sure. Like it's half, right? Versus for all of the major characters to have like not just one of them, like not one of them has just a normal.
But that's why Seven family is so boring.
Well, it's true. I mean, it still ran for X amount of seasons, and a bunch of people watched it. But you think about like other shows that are also popular or whatever, as you have. Yeah, this is more in line like with the family sitcoms. Or one another point that has been brought up sort of over the years is like The Simpsons is actually being like a sign of a more traditional family, because again, you do have the mother and the father, and you've got like the kids, and it's kind of what is the traditional nuclear family, right? And it shows them having struggles, right? And they like sure. things, and it's obviously exaggerated, and it's a cartoon.
But it's funny because I think when it came out, conservatives hated The Simpsons.
Well, that was
thought it was destroying the nuclear family and disrespecting the dad, and
well, I don't know,
making him a buffoon. And
the extent of that's true, because that's sort of been a what do you call it? A not cliche, but
I think Simpsons was like one of the earliest ones to start doing that with like the dumb dad, like the dad is legitimately dumb.
Well, but that was, that was all part of like the Flintstones and the Jetsons, and in some capacity, that was part of the Honeymooners and All in the Family. A lot of those
dads weren't dumb. They might have been like wrong or.
Right. Well, but they were crude. Right.
Sure.
And I think that you could, I'd have to go back and watch Flintstone stuff. I would imagine that I feel like Fred was played off as not the most intelligent, and neither was George. Like they weren't competent people. Like they were like sort of like those middle management or whatever sort of dudes at their jobs, like much like Homer is, where it's like, oh, they just kind of go to their job and they hate their job and they kind of do dumb things and complain about dumb things. I mean, I think Homer was an exaggeration of the slovenliness, maybe of the American, sure. if you will. But I don't think it was something that didn't really exist. I think that the reaction to the Simpsons things, and I could be wrong because we were both pretty young when it premiered. But it was just more because the humor of it was very crude as far as the times, right? In terms of what they were getting away with, maybe more with stuff with Bart and along those things, much like even with like Family Guy, you know, obviously very crude humor. And then like South Park was very socially or like from conservative circles, or I know my parents kind of had like, you know, maligned because of its language and stuff. But I think South Park, oddly enough, more than any of the things we just mentioned, is the most like clever, of the shows as far, or like the most insightful. I would say The Simpsons is quite clever, and they've done, especially in their first 10 years of production, like they were pretty clever and they had a lot of good insights. It's been exposed for the fact that Matt Groening's from the future or whatever else, and his predictions of things. But I'm not even sure.
But anyway, I could be wrong. I swear I remember hearing like conservatives. Yeah, you might be right. It might be more about the language and like the disrespect from Bart to his father and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, when it shows like obviously like there's a lot of the early stuff, and I think it continued to show of Homer strangling, his child and all that stuff. So like there was things that you could surface level be upset about. You kind of you get it, even if you just like, hey, it's a cartoon, get over it.
But I don't think, I don't know, I guess my whole point, and this is like kind of speaks to the politics is downstream from culture argument or whatever, that's what it is, yeah, that I don't think things like Dawson's Creek change. I don't think it changes anything. If anything, they just reflect, because it seems to me that argument is suggesting that we're our culture, we're the things we watched on TV, we're the music we listen to be more like families rule and that kind of stuff, then our culture would be different or shift in some way to be more like family oriented, and we'd see less divorce.
Right. Well,
I feel like culture is more like a mirror to what's going on.
I think that there is, I think it's one of those sort of chicken before the egg kind of things, like when you kind of pose that, because there is a point of art imitates life, life imitates art.
Sure.
Because you can look at our society now, and I think that there is maybe, and again, there's no way to really prove this. I mean, there's probably a way to prove it, but like I don't have the data in front of me as far as I haven't researched it, I haven't looked into it, but I can just base it off of like my peers, right? Like my friends, sure, and people my age. And I was actually just talking about this with another group of friends, is there does seem to be something, especially amongst our generation, and I think generations that have followed us, that aren't as eager to start families, right? Where, and again, like there's completely valid reasons for it, right? As far as just like the cost of living, what it costs to support a child and dealing with ownership of a house and resources. And there's a bunch of like valid reasons, but I think that there's also, and this goes back to, I guess, Ben Shapiro's point with like A Quiet Place, where I think there's always reasons not to do something. Sure. Right. Like, and I don't think that like, even with our parents, or especially with my grandparents, and I don't know about yours, especially with their parents, like they were living in really, you know, really pretty rough times. And I know that my grandparents lived through, you know, the Great Depression, and kind of were, they obviously with it, are, you know, had their kids as a part of the baby boomer thing, where like life was good. But that's still like a lot of uncertainty in the world, which is what we face now. But anyway, I think that there is like this social like acceptance of like either the lack of family or the late start of a family, which maybe again long term is for the best. And I think it's kind of hard to say. But I think at the same time, there are so many people, and I was even just talking about this, or just had a brief little conversation with a friend of mine. There's like a lot of like almost like openly negative, like anti having children rhetoric out there as well. Like, oh, like I could just never have a kid, or I would never, like, it's, you see it in memes, you see it again in, maybe not so much in TV. I don't know if it really is present in TV shows, but you see it, like there's just a million memes about it. And I think memes are pretty reflective of what people are putting out there. Like, you know, like, oh, kids are gross, don't want kids, don't want to deal with that. And like, there's a lot of support for that idea. And that seems antithetical to like, whatever, just survival, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, you bring up a lot of points there. I'd say, to rewind, I would say, you know, historically, I think people had kids because people like to have sex, and they couldn't really have sex unless they got married, or at least not supposed to. And then, you know, there was no birth control, and so kids just kind of started cropping up when people started. Now we don't have to do that. And I think that's a huge reason for why the birth rate declines, is that we can control our reproductive cycles and still have sex, which again was a big, at least in my understanding, is like that was sort of an argument against birth control, is that like, oh, now we're going to not have families and you're ruining the way that God intended it. Like God intended us to, the sex was only for having kids, you know, producing children and yada, yada. So that, I think, is part of the reason why the birth rate declined. But I would say it's actually positive that people are starting families later, because I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that people who delay starting a family tend to have lower divorce rates. Like people who have kids after 30 have a lower chance of getting divorced than people who have kids, say, in their early 20s. At least that seems to be what the data suggests. Because like, just in general, waiting to get married till after 25 is a good way to not get divorced. I do think that 20 to 25 is like a pretty tumultuous period for a lot of people. But your other point about anti-kids, I agree with you that it is weird. It is weird. But at the same time, I think people are just, I don't know. Sometimes when people put out stuff like that, I think they're just being intentionally contrarian, or like they feel attacked for their position for not wanting kids, so they're gonna go on the offensive and be like, actually kids are stupid and they suck and you shouldn't have them at all. But I think lower birth rate is good, generally speaking. I think if you want kids you should go for it. I think we could have less people on the planet and that'd be fine. just in terms of like environmental stuff, I think limiting your kids is probably healthy for the planet, but also for your pocketbook. Like two, maybe three, if you really want to. I mean, have as many kids as you want. I'm not for like a child policy, but yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, there's pros and cons with everything. I do think lower birth rate is generally a positive trend. We don't obviously don't want to all stop having kids. I don't know though, but I don't know if that's a, I don't know if culture has anything to do with that. Maybe it does.
Yeah. And that goes to like the causation correlation kind of question again, mm-hmm. chicken, egg, whatever else it is. And that's what I'm just saying, like just based on conversations I've had, like I feel like there has to be, and again, this is just coming from me. So like, it seems like there's probably some relation for a handful of people. Again, I don't think it's maybe as maybe widespread as some people would like to make it seem. But in general, and we talked about this even last week when it comes to just like how people treat each other, right? Sure. Like when it comes to like the, like trying to help each other out and what we're doing is that they're just, the culture of that has shifted. Now, whether that's through pop culture or just through nature of events unfolding over time,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I'm trying to like, I'm not even sure what I'm trying to say, but
I think, well, I think we've both stumbled onto a thing where, I don't know enough about like how culture comes to be.
And maybe like, that's it seems like, yeah, to examine yeah. it is how cultures kind of come to be. And then even how, I guess, what are is popularly accepted culture and what does that mean? And I think like some people have brought up this point and this, it doesn't necessarily relate to what we're talking about. But there was a point because of the limitations on media and the exposure that we did have like a shared culture, right? In the sense a shared pop culture, like, oh, like most people listen to this music. Most people watch these shows. Most people watch these movies because like the avenue for exposure was limited that like everyone yeah. consumed the same thing. So that gave us sort of like a shared popular culture, even though there were always outliers or subcultures, like, you know, not everyone was as popular as rock and roll may have been from like the 60s up until like the mid 80s, early 90s, whatever. Like there was different kinds of rock and roll and there were still different kinds of music that was in there, but that was sort of the predominant thing. And then, you know, there's always been like pop music, right? But like not everyone's listening to pop music, not everyone's listening to top 40 stuff. And then with movies, like, yeah, you had all the box office hits that didn't really actually exist until Jaws, right? That was, wasn't that considered like the first like box office smashing movie or something like that? Or blockbuster, right? The blockbuster kind of style movie. So then people had those like, oh, this is like the big summer movie that everybody sees, but people would still see smaller movies and stuff like that, which like exist now, but then now there's just so many options. And I think that's generally a better thing, but I think,
sure.
There is something to be said that we might miss about like that shared culture of like, oh, this is the movie that everybody saw last year. This is the TV show that everybody catches on Wednesday nights or TGI Friday, right? Whatever, that was one of the big things there, or whatever the, I don't know, remember what NBC called it with
the must watch TV or something
with Friends and
must, you know, see TV,
Will and Grace, like their Thursday block of comedies. And I think it ended with like ER, like, oh, we have like 2 hours of comedy and then we can depress you with ER.
Right.
Just to put you to bed. But like, it was something that like most people consumed mostly, I guess I imagine, cause like the choice, like they didn't have that many options. It's like, oh, we've got four channels that are playing stuff right now. So, but there, I guess there's just something to be said for that. And there are still things that we have like that kind of, right? Like we still got like, oh, Game of Thrones was still like a huge, you know, national or international phenomenon. Like Stranger Things kind of hit that chord mm-hmm. for a lot of people. You have certain songs that like everybody kind of ends up like at least tapping their toes to or what have you. So it's not like it's gone, but maybe it just seems like its relevance has diminished because of the diluted pool of entertainment. And maybe that doesn't mean anything, but
I hear you. I mean, when I see here Christians, conservatives talk about that, I feel like I hear them gesturing toward like, why can't we all be Christian again or Judeo-Christian or whatever, because they want to lump the Jews in, even though I would say if we're really going to be historical about it, the Jews weren't really considered part of the tribe. And that's the vibe I get, where they want, it's not so much popular culture, but it's like religious culture or like moral culture. But even that, I think that is actually a fantasy that never really existed.
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of that, that pushing of the moral culture. And when they say like the Judeo-Christian, it's obviously, it's not the point where, you know, Jews were widely accepted in a lot of the Western world until whatever the last 100 years.
Yeah.
Less than, right? So, although, I mean, I think that, whatever, in America, it promotes the industrious, and a lot of that community was very industrious and did well for themselves. And there's still, whatever, you got people out there who are,
right, you like know, Robert Kennedy,
but bad people about
Joe Kennedy.
But the lesson still stands when you talk about Judeo-Christian. That's based on like the lessons of the work, because that's from the same point of origin, right? So the Judeo-Christian values aren't dissimilar from each other, even if culturally there are different cultural things, right? Just like, I mean, you can, especially even within Christianity, and I imagine this is also true in Judaism, is you have all these different sects, right? Sects of Judaism, as you do with Christianity, because you've got Catholics and Protestants and Baptists and everything else. And they're actually quite different. Like when
they really hated each other.
When you put them up against each other. So, I mean, maybe it's like, again, time enough has passed where people recognize like, oh, wait a minute, we're all looking at the same thing here. Let's all be on the same team, which makes sense, right? Putting the petty arguments aside. And now this is reminding me of that episode of South Park when they had like that future, like my science is better than your science with, I think it was otters. Like, you know, I don't know if you remember that episode where it's like, like this science is the best science. And like, it obviously kind of made it the conflation with religion, which isn't entirely inaccurate as how we kind of look at things, because we're still tribal, right? But like tribes have, and they morph and they evolve and they change. And then when we're talking about culture, and this is one of the arguments that the Ben Shapiro types or whoever else will kind of make, like, it would be in a world where we can kind of tell that some things are better than others, like, wouldn't it stand to reason that a culture might be better than another culture, and they're thinking theirs is the best, whether that's true or not, right? Is, you know, that's maybe to be determined. But there are, like, you know, so like, that's sort of the philosophy, like, hey, like, there's probably a best culture that best suits like a mass population of people. And you know, you can, I think that there is an argument to be made for the morality and that's attached to Judeo-Christian religion, is like, there, again, there's positives there now, and I think there's positives from like the lessons, not so much the positives in history, right? Because you can look through history and then see you know, atrocities committed in the name of religion across the board, but that doesn't discount like the moral origin of things, sure, or whether that's the, you know, the commandments or whatever else.
Yeah, it's funny, I hear sort of a, now I'm hearing sort of a tension, at least in the Ben Shapiro type's kind of worldview, or at least the conservative, what I conceptualize as a conservative outlook, which is like, on the one hand, I feel like a lot of times conservatives argue for sort of like individualism, making your own choices, being left alone, not having to conform to a common culture, you know, these socialists want to make us all adhere to this thing. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, it'd be awesome if we were all Christian conservatives or whatever, and we all had the same culture, because that would be sick, because I like it.
And then the difference there is, it's a matter of coercion, right? So it's like, you don't want to be forced into any culture. And then I do think this is a more uniquely American problem, like this culture problem, because we do have such diversity of culture here that, like, because there's so many different cultures, subcultures, as we talked about last week with the idea of world peace or whatever, if you have so many things that are different, like, at some point they're going to stand in contrast to each other, and like, they're going to butt heads.
Right.
Right. So you're going to have like, the more different things you have, the more, the higher the probability is of conflict. Whereas there's been talk about this where you can say it's in, you know, over communist China or Russia or the Nordic countries or whatever else, is that they are for the most part culturally homogenous. Like they have like a predominant culture that's pretty obvious to everyone who lives there, and it's just very easily accepted. Whereas if you get into the United States, probably the UK, certain other parts of Europe, you know, where like there's just been so many cultures that get put in, like they talk about the idea of a melting pot. That probably hasn't been true for a while, in the sense it's just more like, yeah, things aren't melting together. It's just a bunch of different things. In the best case, and I see this every day, you know, and I'm sure you do too, coexisting perfectly fine, right? Sure. Like people are just happy to live their lives and do what they do, and you can practice what you want to, and I can practice what I want to. But when you get like the tribalism of it, where people do start to collect, and then they have the louder voice, or even if they aren't even that many people, but if they start being loud, then it's kind of like, well, I don't really like what that person's saying, whether on either side of the political spectrum, either side of the cultural spectrum, people just are noticing it more, and it's going to stand in opposition to someone. And then, you know, by law of averages, it's going to stand in opposition to a group of people. And then that's where it's seemingly started to come to a head more within like the last 10 years and maybe 15. I don't know.
I would say, I'm very ignorant about Chinese culture, which is something I actually am interested in. But my limited understanding is that they actually are not as homogenous. They're like, I think they're trying, I think that's where a lot of their strife comes from, where they do end up jailing a lot of these subgroups, or, you know, I mean, the whole Uyghurs thing,
right?
Force, but even just like, I think a lot of the more like rural, there always seems to be sort of a rural city divide, and the rural people kind of have more traditional, whatever you want to call it, beliefs, and that the government's sort of trying to, you know, move them away in some ways. But cultural divide. This is making me think we should just, we really do need to read that Jonathan Haidt book. I think that would be, that might give us some more clarity around why there's these, because I think his whole thing is it's like just value differences, and those value differences might actually be like in some ways genetic, but anyway, I lost my, what remind me what you just, I went back to the Chinese and I like lost it.
Yeah. Well, it's just the idea of the cultural homogeneity. Am I saying that right? It's just that America in the scheme of human history, I still think even in comparison to China, who might, I think everywhere has cultural diversity. I just think that America has more than a lot of places.
So what I was thinking was that I feel like a lot of the people like again, Ben Shapiro types, and I should stop using him. He's just the one we keep bringing up, but he and some of his ilk, it's like, they're kind of looking for cohesion and through an older religion, and saying, well, if we just all went back and followed these morals, maybe it'd be better. But I actually think maybe the answer is looking forward and finding the morals that transcend our differences. And I do think they do trend. I mean, I think, like we already kind of said, like, I think most people are, at least if they don't want families themselves, pro family in general. Like, they don't want to like destroy, they wouldn't seek to destroy another man's family or break them up or say like, actually you two should be divorced or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think most people, and I'd say most people are pro marriage, or at least pro making relationships work that are healthy and long lasting. I don't think most people are like, they should be short and disastrous. You know, and I think a more forward thinking, again, I don't have any answers, but like finding those common values that transcend our cultural differences and our political differences is maybe the way forward. Those might be hard to find. But
yeah, and I think that's maybe, again, and there's a reason why people consider themselves conservatives, is to conserve something that already exists, right? So when they do fall back on those religious texts or religious practices, that's part and parcel with, you know, I guess conservatism as it's defined, right? Well, this is something that we found that worked for us, so we would like to conserve this, right? But I would agree with you that, like, you know, if you're really wanting to unify, then you probably need to maybe move forward and take a look at what are the things that we do value from this, and how can we integrate that into popular culture or culture at large, so everyone is kind of following along with it. And I think I think what you said is kind of on the money. It's interesting because I mean I think we can still have a different talk about religion at large, because that's a different question, or that's just a big question, right? That's just a big thing to kind of talk about and the history of it and how that has morphed over the centuries or millennia, right? Because it's changed through different times of human existence. I think it's sort of, I don't want to say hard to argue, but there are positives that come from like Judeo-Christian values, and when you consider just moral questions. But yeah, I don't know about imposing it on other people. Like, I'm not a particularly religious person, as you're well aware. But then I've been looking at, and maybe we should just wrap up soon, just in terms of not sure. Overgoing. I haven't been timing anything today. But as I told you, like I've been reading the Tao Te Ching, and I'm getting back into like reading the Daily Stoic, and I've like kind of read a bit about Confucianism, and then I obviously grew up in Catholicism. So I've just kind of been considering some of these different points of view. And it's interesting to me that even with all these things, like these are ancient texts or ancient quotations or references, how none of this is new, right? Sure. None of this division is new. None of these different points of view and conflicting points of view are new. It's just a matter of having so many in a single place with broad exposure is what I think is making the division seem more volatile than it actually really is, right? Like I think like we see the pockets of volatility with people being religious or a-religious, being political, apolitical, or being left or right, being whatever it is it actually doesn't, I think, affect that many people on like a daily basis. But we see it exposed so much that it makes us think that it's like this huge, huge problem.
Yeah.
And not that it doesn't, as a problem that it doesn't need to be addressed, but maybe we need to focus collective efforts elsewhere. I don't know.
No, I actually think you're right on the money. And a lot of, well, now I'm just repeating what you said, right on the money. I agree 100% that I think you read historical texts or anything, and you come to, and I think this is important of reading older things, is you do come to realize, oh, none of this stuff, none of the things that I think are unique to my time truly are unique to my time. And then I think the other point you made, which is correct, is that I do think, even though we did talk about cancel culture for a long time, I do think there are bigger, more impactful problems that, and that these sort of things like the cancel, it is fun to talk about, but the bigger problems that affect us all, we don't talk about or we don't worry about. And like, we worry more about like our petty, there's like a phrase, I think it's called, it's like the narcissism of small differences or something, where groups who are alike tend to hyper-focus on the small ways in which they are different.
Okay.
And we don't think more broadly, like what is impacting us all? What's impacting us all are things like the changing environment, are things like, sort of like this economic inequality that is impacting both conservative and I've heard many liberals complain about like that they want to start a family, but they feel sort of economically insecure. And like, what can we do about that? How could we encourage people to have the security to have families? And I feel like we don't talk about those things because we do get stuck on the, like, can you believe Ben Shapiro is putting out a mover? It is fun to talk about though. And anyway. Not to denigrate our own, and I apologize to anyone listening to this for our Star Wars black hole. Like sometimes you start talking about Star Wars and you just get sucked in. And you just
right into a galaxy far, far away. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and end it there. I feel like there's a lot of topics here that we, in the words of Jen Psaki, we're gonna circle back to. But otherwise, we are gonna catch you crazy kids on the flippity flop.